All right, good morning. I will go ahead and call us to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, April 28, 2015, and ask if everyone would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you again and good morning. Public comment number one is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. I've got two people who would like to speak. They'd like to speak to a specific topic on the agenda, and so we're going to hold those two until then. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the board? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to agency reports, and we have LSI here with us today. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, I'll go ahead and start out. My part tends to be a little shorter. I feel like I could just pre-record my piece every year.
Start with introductions, if you don't mind.
Very good. Okay. All right. My name is Mark Roberts. I'm with Lutheran Services in Iowa. I work with our Services for People with Disabilities program.
I'm Elise Murchison, and I work with People Place.
As far as our disability services are concerned, we provide a number of different services. LSI, of course, provides a broad range of services statewide, including the residential children's residential treatment at Beloit, a number of other services here locally. As far as the county-funded or access-funded services that are service line benefits from. Funds, it's rather a unique situation again because it's not a distribution of money that is then put to use. It's an amount that's encumbered. We provide a service and then it's billed. With our supported community living, we're providing supports for individuals with an intellectual disability or perhaps a chronic mental illness. There are some people who, for some reason, fall through the cracks. They may not qualify for Medicaid, which is typically how the service is funded. For that reason, Story County is a county that's able to provide supports for these individuals who otherwise, otherwise may not receive services and would probably need other supports that would be more costly to the county. And so that's what we're able to do. We're currently providing supports for two Story County residents who meet this criterion. So it's not a large number. I'm sure it's very significant and important for those individuals and their families.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm representing People Place, and we are early childhood education and a support for families of young children. And we do this in a variety of ways. We have several programs that we operate. Oh, by the way, we are located not on the Beloit campus. We're downtown on 6th Street. We have what we call, for moms and dads, after baby comes, we provide three mornings a week, a child care room with trained staff, and the parents come. We're not licensed, so they stay on our premises while their children enjoy the activities. They can, our parents do things like chit-chat with each other, pay bills, study, or just relax, and it gives them a time off. We also, during this time, provide community resources. We have speakers that come in. We cover things like nutrition. We cover medical things. We also really like, and the parents do, have people from the community with resources for activities for families come in and talk about those. You know, example would be Ryman Gardens, and we also have the in the fall, the people who have the apple orchard. But we try to find as many of those as we can so that our families can find friendly family activities within the community. We offer a parenting class. It's just ending. It goes from September through May. Twice a month, the families come, and we offer a dinner and then child care while the parents go through our curriculum. And we use the nurturing parenting curriculum. So it's a specific curriculum that we go through with the parents. Crisis child care is an important part of our programming. So far this year, we have provided care to 47 unduplicated children. Now, we may have provided care for them more often, but in terms of unduplicated, and that means 21 families, and this is just in Story County. We can provide up to 72 hours of crisis child care. It could be just a couple of hours, depending on what the family needs. Things that bring families to us have to do with homelessness. It has to do with some mental health issues or medical issues. Things like that. Sometimes we're working with homeless families or preventing homelessness. So it is in my mind, and I work in the program, it really helps prevent child abuse. It helps hold families together while the family goes through the crisis. And I want to emphasize it's the family in the crisis, not necessarily the children. But the family needs a safe place for their children while they work on whatever is causing the crisis. And there's some pretty formidable things that happen. An example, we have we worked with a grandmother who had custody of her grandson. She is very ill. The grandson has special needs, and it's been quite a challenge for her, and we've done what we can to help and also provide resources for her in that difficult situation. Another example is this was very short term. A mother and a baby found herself homeless almost instantaneously, went to the police station. They called us, and we were able to provide care for her baby while she made other arrangements. That only lasted a few hours, but it could have lasted overnight depending on what kind of resources she had to take care of it. So those are kind of some of the examples that we have for our families in crisis child care. We also have parents as teachers, which is an in-home parenting situation. So the parents voluntarily come to us, and we provide developmental information. We show them how to, you know, things that they can do to increase school readiness for their children. It goes 0 to 5 up to school. It's a popular program, and we are pretty full. And it does, the philosophy of parents as teachers is the parents are the children's first best teachers. And what we can do to empower parents to work with their children in the baby and toddler and preschool stages will make a difference throughout their school. And so that would be, I would say we had 51 children in parents as teachers this year.
Outstanding questions. We're so appreciative of everything LSI does for the community and all the gaps that you guys fill. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, a consideration of minutes from April 21st.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and second. Any corrections or additions? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions as listed.
Move approval.
Second.
A motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions passed. Consent agenda. Board, please add road closure 1536, 1537, 1538.
And I would like to pull items 4 through 10 for some further discussion.
4 through 10. All right.
Okay, move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda with the noted changes passed. Let's talk about items 4 through 10, Paul.
I received a phone call this morning from Arden Greiner, a citizen here in Story County. He had looked over the agenda and had some concerns on the contracts that are listed under items 4 through 10. Some of those contracts appeared to him to be incomplete. If you look at the contracts are all the same through the asset process. In the very last paragraph, it calls for a address.
Just a contract address.
Correct. In the event that either party wants to terminate, they need to supply an address where we can send a notice. Some of those are incomplete. I would just ask if Deb Shildroth could maybe come up and speak to that for just a second, if she would.
Good morning. Morning.
Morning.
As you know, we craft these contracts on an annual basis, and so we have all of the providers' information in our database, And so if it's not included on that contract, we do have the address that we use for billing purposes, for correspondence purposes. And some of them do get missed where they don't put that address in, but I think they assume we have that in our database, and so they don't fill it in, or they may forget to fill it in. But we have that information on record.
Outstanding. And I just ask, since it's a contract, I just ask if we can get it added to any of them that it's missed.
Sure.
On that would be great.
Sure.
He also had a question about the 990, the IRS 990 forms from these individual providers in an audit, and if you'd speak to that for just a second.
Sure. It is the policy of ASSET to have agencies turn in an IRS 990, so we get that from every agency. Each funder in the ASSET process gets a copy of that. And then agencies whose budgets are $100,000 or greater are required to turn in an audit to each funder. So we have all of that on record currently in the Community Services Office on behalf of the county.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd move approval of items 4 through 10.
Second.
Motion and second on 4 through 10. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Items 4 through 10 on the consent agenda now pass. No public hearing items. Additional items. Discussion and consideration of funding for the 75-year celebration is requested from the Story County Fair Association.
That would be Mr. Moody.
Yeah, Mr. Moody.
Where's your partner today?
That's right. I was looking for...
It's
not a meeting if Longnecker's not here.
Good morning. Thank you. This is the 75th year for the incorporation of the fair and being everything set up in Nevada here at the fairgrounds. And we're working on trying to do a few additional things than just the normal fair. The document that we submitted kind of lists briefly. I'll answer any questions anyone may have on those that's on that. But just wondering if the county would be willing to help support some of those additional activities that we're planning this year. I would greatly appreciate the support you already give the fair, but special year this year and looking to do a few extra things.
Well, it's such a great fair. I mean, just unique. The job you guys do running is outstanding. Thoughts, questions?
I think it's a good idea. We did have this discussion when you came to us initially in January for your budget, and we suggested this would be a better platform for that.
I think in view of the fact that this is a public meeting, it's an item that's been brought before us. The public isn't aware of some of the requests and some of the things that they'd like to do. I think it would be appropriate to share some of those items that the funding request is planning to do.
Okay. We're looking to have activities for kids, try and bring in more than just the 4-H kids is what a lot of these activities are. Most of this would be on the weekend, the Saturday, Sunday. A petting zoo has been lined up, and they bring it, it's not the normal Midwest petting zoo. They've got some different type of animals in the petting zoo as well. I'm not exactly sure what all that is included. I just know that was the comment made at the board meeting when we decided to go with this one. I mean, that one's been booked. The pony rides have been booked. Actually, all of these items have been booked, the inflatables, just different activities for kids to have going on. We're looking to do a barbecue on late Sunday afternoon, evening, in part that probably being a free will donation to that, which would go toward the renovation efforts for the community building. Mm-hmm. That's underway right now. We're doing fairly well on that. Still can use more money there on that project, but that it could be, you know, who knows who will show up to that type of an event. I mean, we're hoping for maybe 1,000 people showing up for that barbecue that evening. And the history committee within the 4-H has invited all of the past Grand Champion Market beef animal winners since 1940, the first year of the fair here in Nevada, or on the fairgrounds. They're missed at the last meeting. They were missing, I think, six different ones that they were trying to get nailed down. But going to invite all of them to an activity reunion deal that goes on earlier in the afternoon on Sunday, and you know, that's something that'll probably continue with other species in years. I mean, every year we've had that 4-H reunion here in the last 10 or 12 years, and they'll probably move to other species in that deal, but. The barbecue is one of the big deals that's more than just the kids this year.
Mm-hmm. Is this a separate fundraising effort from your regular budget, or is this included in what? I mean, do you have an idea how much you've raised towards this up to this point?
There is sponsorship for the pony rides and partial sponsorship on the petting zoo. And I don't have exactly what those numbers are that we have.
I think it's a worthwhile project. We just need to determine an appropriate amount and where that's going to come from.
So for me, you look at what we fund as part of the fair, and clearly our funding goes toward the items like advertising and supplies and some of those things, and so I go through this and I say, all the attractions, those are great, but I'd like to see us fund the portions that are not the attractions, and it be up to the fair board to figure out how to fund those attractions. So as I go through and I look at this, I come up with $2,750 that I believe it's completely appropriate for us to look at funding. And then the entertain, you know, if you want a pony ride, yeah, great, but go get that sponsored and let's move on. You know, that's where I come down, but I don't know if that's anywhere close to where you guys are.
Well, to be honest, I hadn't even factored in for sure exactly, you know, where I stood on the additional request. I wasn't in the earlier meeting when they came this year. Normally right. I'm there. So I just saw this. But I do know that, you know, as a board, the three of us have often just kicked in an additional donation towards awards that's usually given and so forth. I guess my question would come back to you, Rick. You pay very close attention to a lot of the flow of dollars and so forth. Where would appropriately these dollars come from? Because, again, this would be an unbudgeted item. Are you looking at coming from the ending fund balance?
Yeah, I mean, we have $2,750, and only going to cause Markley a couple more gray hairs.
Yeah, I know we have the capacity, and that's my question. So,
and as far as what we do individually, Wayne,
right.
I would encourage the three of us to continue to do that.
Yeah, I would too.
So that everybody knows individually, what do we each kick in?
Through the ribbon auction, the three of us pool our own funds and typically purchase two or three ribbons at the ribbon auction, you know, maybe a total of $400 or $500 for two or three ribbons, whatever we can purchase. But that's on our own with our own funds.
And that just goes in support of the kids that are doing the work.
That goes to the individual either FFA. I think it's just for 4-H members, isn't it?
No, it's FFA as well.
FFA and 4-H, okay. Yep. I think the... to stay in line with what we typically fund, I think the $2,750 for the that's in line with those items for the advertising and the supplies would be appropriate, and I would make that motion that we agree to fund up to $2,750 towards advertising and supplies for the celebration for the fair.
Now, Rick, where'd the other come through? I see the advertising request here around $2,000, and I see the supplies of $250. Where's the other?
They've got costs for the barbecue that they're taking a free will donation, but 100% of those proceeds are going back toward the renovation of the community building.
Okay.
So I actually view that $500 for the barbecue as supplies, fundraising supplies, is what I'm viewing it as.
Okay.
That's how I get to $2,750.
Okay. All right.
Is it helpful?
Oh, yeah. We didn't put a specific figure in to ask from you. We just gave you the whole what we're looking at doing
I'm just trying to be consistent with what we do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because we didn't get real specific in January when we were talking with you as to exactly what, so just brought this to you as we've put plans together more to see if what you could do for support, and anything you can do will greatly help us move things forward.
Wayne, are you interested in seconding Paul's motion?
Yes, I would. I've got clarification. I will second that motion.
Okay. Further discussion.
Clarification on where and so forth.
Absolutely. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 27 up to 27.50 for those items.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming over. Absolutely.
The long neckery is in trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll pass that along.
Would have been 2,800 if he'd have made it.
Thank you.
Yep.
28.15. All right. Next item is a discussion and consideration of Resolution 1569 regarding Board of Supervisors' position on annexation of land located in Section 16 and 21 of Washington Township into the City of Ames. Hi, Charlie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have another annexation request from an individual into the City of Ames. I believe the documentation was included on the agenda, so there really isn't too much that I will add to that. Just in summary, it is a proposed, quote-unquote, 80-20 annexation. However, a little over 97% of the land in this is actually consenting, of which four parcels owned by Hunziker are asking for the annexation, and then 2.9% is non-consenting, which is going to be brought in to avoid creating an island, and that is just a piece of old rail bed that kind of sits between the Wessex apartment complex and this property. That individual, I believe, who owns that property is out in California, so it was somewhat difficult for them to communicate with that person, so that is why it's being brought in under the 80-20.
So the 20 acres place. Immediately south of Wessex Apartments is what we're talking about.
Yep, and it is a total of 20 acres. It's the Montebello bed and breakfast that's down there. I'm not sure if that business is going to stay open or not once this is annexed, but that property will ultimately be developed by Hunziker. We did send this out around our interagency review team just for comments, as we are starting to normally do now. We didn't receive any comments. The only comment I think we did offer the city was from myself, and just reassuring that, you know, by annexing this 97% consenting, that we're not going to put the city and the county in a bind later down the future where we're not able to annex some of that property down in that growth area by using an 80-20. There's, five or six single-family dwellings in the area, which are typically the ones who are the non-consenting properties, and there's some large ones down there as well. But
well, and there was talk about bringing them all in, because now this was a one-piece deal that's now turned into maybe a three-piece deal, right? We talked about it with the research park, but then didn't do it.
Yep, there was at the public hearing for the research park annexation, three or four of the property owners backed out at that time. So now this was one of them, and this one is coming in, and then there's some other property down there that may come in the future. The one issue that we look at, I think, is that you have those five single-family dwellings on South 530th that are going to be right across the street from the research park. Those particular property owners are going to be in the county and are going to start having to deal with all the expansion down there, the road improvements that are going to take place, the road name change that will ultimately happen to University Boulevard, and are still going to be county residents. So we'll have to deal with them and kind of get out in front of that here in the near future and let them know the changes that are going to be taking place.
Mm-hmm. Questions for Charlie?
And the resolution is obviously of taking no position as usual. And
which is our
tradition, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I don't have a question. I just think, again, that we would follow the same similar format of just taking no position and acknowledging the resolution that's brought before us. So I would put that in the form of a motion.
And I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second to pass Resolution 1569, taking no position on the annexation of Section 16 and 21. Further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, Charlie. Next item is discussion and consideration of a survey from the Dickinson County Board of Supervisors regarding changes to the master matrix allowing for more local control. On March 24, 2015, the Dickinson County Supervisors sent out a survey to, I think, all 99 counties. We got it, this letter dated then. And they say, gentlemen, at our last County Board of Supervisors meeting, the subject of having the existing master matrix system repaired to include more local control over our county's environmental resources was discussed. We would like to know how your supervisors feel about this topic. Could you please hold a discussion and submit the attached findings back to us within the next 30 days, which we've already missed? We will tabulate the results and share them with you. Thank you for your help, Dickinson County Board of Supervisors. And they say, on the subject of having the existing Iowa Master Matrix system repaired to include more local control for our county concerning the regulation, protection, and preservation of our county's natural resources was discussed. Our county supervisors were noted as follows. And so three questions. Number of supervisors in favor of Master Matrix repair for more local control. Number of supervisors opposed to Master Matrix repair for more local control. 3, number of supervisors with no opinion to Master Matrix repair for local control and then submitted. So those are the items that we're discussing. Anything you guys want to add before we take a couple of public comments?
I would just like to say that I think for the benefit of the general public, they're probably not aware as to how much this topic is floated around through the Iowa Association of Counties Supervisors Exec Board that I sat on. I brought this subject up every year. Frankly, it's going to be a very difficult issue for the Executive Board to weigh in on. We will be having another meeting coming up again soon, and I will once again try to hear more about what's happening on a statewide basis. The area, though, here that makes a lot of sense to me is what we've talked about all along, and I can't understand why supervisors statewide aren't at least willing to exercise more local control, particularly in how the master matrix is scored when we talk about environmental impact issues dealing with water quality, air quality, etc. But we seem to have quite a divide, and I'll be very honest with you. I don't know if the legislature is really willing to take on this, but it has to start somewhere. And I know we've talked about it, and I know, Margaret, before you came on board years ago, there were always several issues in the scoring process, how that they a proposed facility could only have to score on certain things. It made it really easy for them, but yet some of the things that have much more of an environmental impact tend to be minimized in the actual scoring, which puts us as local elected officials or interested citizens at a real disadvantage. And so as I see what is really here, I can't see anything here that's objectionable to me, because I do think that we need to talk to DNR, talk to the legislators about things in the matrix that could be looked at, addressed. I think this has now been in place now. I'm not sure. Is it? I know it's been at least over a decade when we first started to go through passing the resolution in support of it. But I just want the public to realize that this is a very difficult issue to get supervisors to wrap their arm around and willing to support. You've got the far west, you've got Sioux County in that area. Hog confinement and hog issues is a way of life in that particular area. You've got other areas where now there these corporate groups are starting to try to make a presence, and they are not, and counties, rightfully so, are concerned about, you know, them gaining a foothold in that particular area. So I don't know if much is going to happen within the next year or two. I know that what is asked of us here, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't. I wouldn't have any objection asking for our consideration of looking at the master matrix. I would like to have us be in a position to offer input to how that should be scored, how that should be looked at. But that's just my personal take on that, and I just think it's important. What is also unknown is I think the general public isn't really aware of what local control really means. Local control doesn't necessarily mean that because 70, 80, or a group of people stand up and say they don't want it, that it will automatically not happen. That's not really the idea of what local control really is about. But it gives us as supervisors, us as the person like yourself who is evaluating and looking at these, more teeth in terms of making sure certain measures are in place if it is to go forth, and that cost should be passed on to the producer. But right now, I don't think we've got a whole lot of say in what happens, because the law is pretty much weighted on the side of the producers or farmers, in my opinion. And but that's neither here nor there.
Margaret, anything to add?
I agree with Wayne completely. What I would like to see, you know, it's not realistic to think that this whole master matrix is going to change, but what I would really like to see is the requirement of them getting those points for manure management. The setbacks to wells is zero if you say you're going to incorporate it within that day. That's really hard to enforce, because if you catch somebody really close to the well, they could just say, you know, later today we're going to come by with a second pass, things like that. So, you know, it's not realistic that this is going to change a lot. I realize the state wants, you know, a level playing field for CAFOs to come into all the counties, but I would like to have a little more input on the grading and the specifics on the master matrix.
Good. Paul, anything?
I think the force behind this from Dickinson County was that they had an application that was going to locate a one of these facilities fairly close to one of their lakes. I don't know which lake it was.
Not unsimilar to our situation.
Similar to ours.
And I remember the coverage on this, but that was their concern, was that they had, as supervisors, they had no input onto where this could be located.
We had the same concern. We had exactly the same concern.
And we took some action on that when the proposal or the application for the one near Hickory Grove. We did. And I can't remember if we passed a resolution, but there was. We did take some action as far as whether or not we would support it if it was located within a certain distance from a waterway in Story County. So I think what they're trying to do is send a message to the legislature that there's some concern on the part of county supervisors that really at this point they have little if any input. Wayne, you're absolutely correct. I think there's a lot of supervisors that would just as soon be able to say that we don't have any say over this and we don't want to have any say over this. And that's the easy way, you know, and that's the easy way to go. The conversations I've had with a couple of legislatures locally is that the state's concerned that if they do turn it over to the counties, then you get a particular county, you may not be able to have any of them located in that county, or they only may be able to be located in the eastern half or the western half of the county, and that's what the state's afraid of. So it's going to be a long, difficult process to get changes made in this. But I would support some recall or repair, whatever Dickinson County wants to call it, on the master matrix. And I would like to see the DNR be willing to open up and sit down with a group of board of supervisors, such as the board of directors from our affiliate, and get some input from them. And up to this point, I don't think they've been necessarily been willing to do that.
Well, I agree with both of you. The reality is 10 or 12 years is a long, long time without reviewing something. We do know more now than we knew 10 or 12 years ago about some of the potential impacts of these kind of things. We have more of them now than we had 10 or 12 years ago. But more than anything else for me, I know I disagree with a lot of supervisors when I say this. I really dislike being the receiver of the complaints and the concerns without having any authority whatsoever to do anything about it. And so in my mind, it should be one of two things. Either the state can have it all, but then they deal with it all. They deal with the complaints. They deal with everything all the way through. Or if they want it local, some local control. I'm a believer that we better have some minimums and some maximums statewide, Paul, to deal with exactly what you're talking about. I don't want to see, you know, you go 20 feet one way or another, and because you're in a different county and it's 20 feet, you're dealing with an entirely new set of rules. I think we're opening ourselves up to some real problems then, because there will be some counties in any system that just say, okay, we're open for business, let's go, and they don't approach it in an intelligent way. But if you're going to keep the supervisors involved in it, which I think they should be, then they ought to have some control. And I think Margaret's right. We ought to be responsible for some of the inspections. We ought to be responsible for the enforcement of it. And we ought to be able to have some teeth in some of the enforcement of it. Right now, we have more teeth for somebody who wants to open a home business in their basement.
Absolutely.
Than we do for something like this. And to me, that's ridiculous.
So that's
where I come down. Anything to add before we open this up?
I would just add one thing. Margaret, each year, all of the affiliates of ISAC gets to propose legislative changes. I would think that this should be something coming from environmental health that ought to be asked, for us to consider. And ultimately it will come before the board, the ISAC board. But I think that's the process. If we're talking about making it part of the legislative agenda to ask the legislators to look at revising the master matrix, that's where, in my opinion, it could start. So if you would be willing to either reach out and contact some of your constituents in other counties in the environmental health area to see if they would be willing to support at least the things that you're mentioning. And then it could be brought forth to the committee that meets, I think it's in August, where they meet to lay out the legislative agendas. And then ultimately, once it's there, it will come before the ISAC Board of Directors and then to the general body in the fall to vote on the resolutions that are passed.
Okay.
Because in order for ISAC to support it, it's got to go through that. They're not basically going to just support one individual county's initiative. So there needs to be a group coming together with a request.
Well, it's a great place for it to start with your group, Margaret. I agree with Wayne. I think it's problematic for it to start with the supervisor affiliate, because we have enough supervisors who want to be able to sit there and say, oh, we don't have any control.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the survey turns out.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have more trouble getting these surveys back in than, because the ones that are opposed aren't going to go on the record of being
well, there'll be some. I think if you really look at this, there is nothing in here that should be really a concern from a legislative standpoint, from a supervisor standpoint. The survey itself and your statement, Supervisor Sanders, I think is right on. We ought to be taking a look at this by now, and because science has shown us that there is far more damage than what was anticipated, and we have really sound reasons for wanting to see some changes in how it scored.
Not only the damage, but there's much more technology today than there was. I mean, it's expensive technology, but there's all kinds of digesters and everything else that California has really been working on. It's $1 million. It's another $1 million for a normal sized CAFO, but it takes a lot of the bad out. So there's all kinds of ways, and I would be happy if the state would just take a fair, honest look at it, and then wherever they come down, and we'll deal with it, and we'll move on. But I think it is time to take a fair and honest look at it. Margaret, anything else?
No, that was good.
Okay.
Thank you.
First one I got was from Brenda Brink. Brenda, come on up.
Thank you. My name is Brenda Brink. I'm from near Huxley. I'm also a proud member of CCI, so I have been at these meetings. And I'm very gratified to hear that there seems to be a unanimous understanding of the fact that the master matrix is very flawed, And those of us who are just on the cusp of being told that we might have a factory farm moving into us, into our neighborhood, with all the attendant nuisance factors of that, flies, smell, ruination of property values, it's time to take a look at it, and I appreciate that, and I would encourage you to make that clear in your response.
Thank you. And next, our friend Susie Petra.
Good morning. Nice to see all three of you, and I, too, am very gratified to hear your comments. We know that manure is produced by the many, many millions of hogs and cattle and poultry raised every year here in Iowa, and they produce nutrients that get into our streams, our rivers, and our drinking water. You know, in almost every other aspect of government, local control is preferred by the state legislature. So I am urging you to sign that you support doing something, looking at this master matrix. We do think it has no teeth. It is currently a joke. And with that survey, I really hope that we let the legislators know that it's time to do something. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Paul, you got three choices: favor of master matrix repair for local control, opposed to it, or no opinion.
In favor of.
In favor of. Second the motion.
And Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 3-0 in favor of the support repair of the master matrix for more local control. And we saved this discussion item. I think we were going to do it a few weeks ago, and then we had some counter issues, but we felt like these two lined up. Actually, coming out of our last CAFO discussion, we had asked Margaret James to take a look at the way we were evaluating the master matrix and see if there wasn't, with, you know, granted, we have no real control, but make sure that we're doing everything we can to really dig in, hold accountable where we can hold accountable, but be completely fair to the law without putting quite as much pressure on one staff member as we clearly were putting on Margaret. So, Margaret, we ask you to take a look at this. Tell us what you found.
I would like to form a committee, and I think we've talked about this a little bit before, that would include several departments, and we would sit down, and those with the expertise on those items asked to be scored would score them, and then the committee would agree as a group what the final scoring would be. I don't think the outcome would be any different, because if I need an opinion from the assessor on something, I call them up and get that. That's how I did it in the past, but this would just be a more formal way of coming up with a score for a master matrix. That group would pretty much look like the interagency group.
So tell me that group as you see it.
Well, there's a few folks that probably don't need to be there because I've never needed their input, but I thought environmental health would be the lead agency, and then we also need conservation, the assessor, planning and development, emergency management, and the engineer. Am I forgetting anybody, Paul?
You have conservation on there.
Yes. You got conservation.
And planning and development.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I want us to talk seriously about one citizen, and I think it is a citizen coming off of our Planning and Zoning Commission makes the most sense to me. So you've proposed six individuals. I'd like to have seven individuals. I'd like one of them to be a citizen representative rather than a staff member.
Okay.
And so I'd like you guys to consider the addition of somebody from our Planning and Zoning Commission. And then finally, I want one other step in there so that we don't deal with some of the things we dealt with last time, and that is this group act in a timely enough fashion that everything that they're proposing runs through our civil council to make sure it passes muster with whatever the state laws say it is before it comes to us, so that we're not dealing with some of the things we found that we had to deal with.
Okay. My one question, I guess, the citizen, would you look for a particular background?
Charlie and I have had this discussion a little bit, and why don't you come on up? When I asked him if he wanted to be on, I asked you, didn't I? Or did I tell you?
I think this was one of those duties as assigned.
But we had talked about a member of the Planning and Zoning Commission serving on this, and I was going to leave it up to Charlie, because he best knows who's on that commission. There's obviously people on that commission that have an agricultural background. Currently, there's somebody on there with a strong agricultural background, and you know that would or could possibly somebody would think that would be a conflict of interest. So it's my idea to leave the selection of the citizen off the P&Z commission up to the Planning and Development Director.
Yeah, and I would go one step further. I mean, I think Charlie should have huge input, but I think it ought to be the Planning and Zoning Commission ought to select which one of their members is part of that.
And we could run that through our chair at a meeting at some point. And I don't know, we can talk about this obviously outside of a meeting, but I don't know if we need to have one particular member that we have on there or depending on what application comes in,
sure.
And we take it to them and say which one of you has time in the next couple weeks to be able to devote to this. So.
Yeah.
Do we want somebody, that's what I'm asking, I guess, is do we want to appoint one person right now, or do we kind of want to leave it open and then wait till the application comes in and then appoint somebody per application?
For me, I'd like to see one person who serves unless there's some kind of conflict of interest for that person serving on a particular
I agree, because catching someone up to speed every darn time.
Yep. Well, the first thing I'm going to want to do when we pull it, while I know, Margaret, you've gone to these people and asked them, first thing I'm going to want to do is I'm going to want to make sure that this group gets together and sits down with our civil attorney and runs through exactly what the law is. This is a group that should be able to see things black and white. It either qualifies for the points or it doesn't qualify for the points under our current system, and there's not a whole lot of gray area to deal with. This just gives us the expertise, and in my mind, it takes some of the – I know you felt almost immeasurable pressure this last time.
It takes some
of this off, and it allows us to deal with this. Because the reality is, like the state law, don't like the state law, whatever, we're bound dealing with the state law. Let's do the best we can with what we've got.
I guess the only thing I was thinking of getting, you know, an ag person on here is there really are some things that I don't know the standard procedures, like how the feeding, if they should get credit on this and that. I can just go by fact sheets that I find, you know, and that's why I'm kind of looking for some ag expertise. But
let's see what the Planning and Zoning Commission comes up with in terms of we got some ag people on there. We've got some people with good planning backgrounds on there. Let's see who they determine should be. And then if we have a hole that we need to look at filling, let's talk about that again. I like the looks of this group. I think we're hitting all different kinds of areas. We've got all kinds of different perspectives. And most importantly, those staff members that you named, those are outstanding staff members who are absolutely by the book, and I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would just turn, Jessica, county attorney has been mentioned a couple times.
Forgiven, huh?
Jessica, I just want to know your thoughts. I know that I've visited with you about the potential of this and see if you have anything to add or anything that you would caution us on.
Well, good morning to the board. As the public may or may not be aware, this Board of Supervisors, when we're dealing with CAFOs, has always gone above and beyond legal requirements. A couple examples of that include the fact that we're not required to pass a construction evaluation resolution, but this board has done so. And they're not required to hold a public hearing regarding CAFOs, but this board has done so sometimes against my advice because, you know, of the transparent nature of this board. And to me, this is another example of the board going above and beyond those requirements. And I've spoken with the county attorney, and he and I are very supportive of this and will help with legal expertise any way we can.
Thank you very much. Paul Wayne, any questions?
No.
Comments? So what I, and Margaret, let's just make sure that we have, go ahead.
So do you want to have a meeting with Jessica before we get our next master matrix in so that we've got everything in place, or do you want to just...
I think that'd be a good idea. We'll plan to do that. So once everybody's up and ready to go, then when we get the application, then everybody knows what their piece of that
okay.
is going to be.
Okay.
Yeah, and we'll just review the code requirements with the entire group and go through the master matrix, and I can answer any questions legally so that once
you see an application, the group will be ready to go. And then I'll be there for legal advice as well. And like the board discussed, once you've done your scoring, I can review that to make sure it meets legal requirements.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so we'll wait till Charlie gets an answer on the person from the...
Yeah, Charlie, will you get that on the next P&Z commission? So just to make sure we're all on the same page, Director of Environmental Health will be the lead of this group. Director of Conservation will be on it. The Assessor will be on it. Planning and Development Director will be on it. Emergency Management Director will be on it. Our Engineer will be on it. And one member of the Planning and Zoning Commission, as chosen by the Planning and Zoning Commission, will be on it. They will share their findings with the civil attorney to be reviewed on a legal basis prior to submission to the Board of Supervisors, and then we are the body that will take action one way or another on whatever we get.
Okay.
Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes.
Let me just, the one question, I like the concept of formation of committee. The question that always comes to mind is the timing of these things, and let's say that you've got... Well, I'm going to just use the engineer for example. It's possible that they could be tied up in something else going on at that particular time. If they've been part of it, are they in a position to designate one of their people to sit in and represent them in a meeting and give feedback back, even though they may not be the one that is ultimately going to make the decision? What my concern, obviously, is that all of these are basically department heads of our, you know, departments that answer to the Board of Supervisors, which I have no problem with asking them to fulfill this responsibility. But I do know that there could be circumstances, meetings, other things that might take them away, that they may not be able to be there for each and every session through that process. Could there be a provision that they could designate someone to sit in a particular meeting to review information and give them feedback?
I think that's completely up to the board. I mean, this is all discretionary on the board's part, and if that's something you'd like us to add into this, we'd be happy to.
I think that's reasonable. I mean, actually less than half of this committee answers directly to the board. I mean, if the assessor, conservation director...
Well, that's true.
Even emergency emergency management and health. If the director's not available, I think the director would have the ability to appoint a representative to sit on that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I would not draw the line quite that far to sit on that, be available in their absence. That would make sense to me. I think we're within our purview, even though several of these positions do not report to us. I think we're in our purview to ask and expect that they would serve on this. And I think it's the right way to go. We do need to put some timelines on things. So we've got 30 days from receipt of an application to deal with it or not, right? And so it seems to me that this group ought to have 3 weeks, 21 days, to dig in and deal with it and get their findings to the civil attorney in that time so that it can get on our agenda within that 30-day time frame. We need to not push it.
That's unreasonable?
Yep.
So do we need to make a motion?
Absolutely.
I would make a motion that we form the committee that's going to score this master matrix as the... representatives from the Planning and Development Office, Emergency Management, the Assessor's Office, the Engineer's Office, Conservation Commission, Board of Health, County Attorney's Office, and a member from the Planning and Zoning Commission.
I like that. Second.
Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Margaret, good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Now we're to departmental reports. Veterans Affairs, Brett McLean. Brett, you're all dressed up today.
No tie, though. Good
morning, Board.
Morning.
I'm greeting from the Commission of Veterans Affairs. I can't be here this morning.
I don't want you to be offended that you're running everybody out.
That's okay. I have a short report, really. For our third quarterly report, We've seen seven veterans for county benefits, rent, utilities, dental. We had one funeral for a total of $4,933.95. Also, we've seen 233 veterans in the last 3 months for state and federal benefits. 113 original claims were developed and sent to Des Moines. 12 claims we reopened for our increase. And out of that group, 29 of them were World War II veterans, 19 Korea veterans, 73 Vietnam War veterans. You can tell where our retirees are, what group our retirees are here. 19 veterans from Persian Gulf, 14 from the Cold War, and 42 from Iraq and Afghanistan. We also was able to enroll 29 into the VA healthcare system. Also at this quarterly report, I usually say, hey, this is where we're at with the budget, 75% way through. As of the end of March, we started with 174,590, which was our approved budget, 73% used. And we have 46,857 left. We got some events coming up in March. In May. We have the Vietnam Veterans Recognition Day is May 7th. The ceremony will begin at 11 o'clock at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial located at the Iowa State Capitol Building in Des Moines. Governor Terry Branstad is scheduled to officiate the ceremony as he did in 1984 when the memorial was dedicated. This year's ceremony, we're going to add a name to the Vietnam Memorial. Recently, there was a group of dedicated veterans that learned that a name of the Iowa Army veteran on the Vietnam Wall was could be missing from the Iowa Vietnam Veterans Memorial. After a vast amount of research and record checking, it was confirmed that an Iowa was missing from the roll call of the Iowa Monument. His name is Douglas Peterson. He entered boot camp November 1967, served in Company D. Peterson was severely wounded October the 1st, 1969, in Vietnam and was evacuated initially to Camp Drake, a U.S. hospital installation in Japan. He suffered severe wounds in his lungs, spleen, and spine was from enemy small fire. Never fully recovered, he died March 9th, 1975, at the age of 25. His family is going to be present on May 7th at the Vietnam Veterans Recognition Day. Also, for a couple of years we've been doing the homeless stand down, which the fun factor was there. We had a ball. We met a lot of people. The only problem was we didn't have a whole lot of veterans showing up. Made a lot of referrals to community services. The VA had a little bit of a problem with that. So we decided to, number one, we had to change the name a little bit. And then we had to figured we'd incorporate a little bit of what we do at the homeless stand down, a little bit of what we do at the supermarket. In the last 10 years, maybe 12 years, we've done a supermarket. Between 90 and 151 people showing up. We do a homeless stand down. We have, four veterans show up. So anyway, a week from this Friday, May 8th, we're going to a Veterans Appreciation Day. It's going to be from 10 till 2. It's going to be at the Ames Banshell Park, 6th Street and Duff. We're going to have food, haircuts, Veterans Resource and Services, county, state, and federal benefits. And it's open to all veterans and spouses, and it's free. And by using all of our resources, pretty much the whole thing is free.
food's been donated, the park's been donated, the 100 chairs is donated, and so really isn't costing the county, you know, there's nothing coming out of our budget to put this together outside of maybe just a little bit of advertising that we're gonna be doing. May 19th, Seniors Expo. We have a booth there that day. That's going to be in Ames. And then we're also going to do a newsletter in May. Around 3,700 veterans will get a newsletter on upcoming things. And we also have an opening. Harlan Borton's going to be leaving us after 28 years. And I hope to bring him to our next quarterly meeting for a little send-off here. We hope to have a recommendation to the board by the first Tuesday in June for your review and selection of a new commissioner.
Outstanding. You got a little wet Saturday at your Freedom Run, didn't you?
Yes.
But you had decent turnout and raised some money for yep. the Freedom Flight?
Yep.
And doing is that going to continue in perpetuity, or are we winding that down?
We're probably looking at this will be our final flight.
This will be it?
Yeah, this is what we're thinking. Right now we have 147 signed up. So we actually didn't think we would do four. We thought it would be more like, you know, three, maybe two would do it. But Jasper County did four, and that was their final flight. So we're thinking this will.
And when will this one be?
This will be October the 6th.
Okay.
The fourth is we'll do our send off on that Sunday, and then the majority of these, actually we have zero World War II veterans signed up. We have about 12 Korea veterans, and then the rest are Vietnam.
Yep.
So
we accomplished our goal of getting all the way through the World War II vets while we still had them.
So we're thinking on this one, you know, as we go through this, it's really interesting how. You know, through all three of them, or in that three of them that we've already done, things changed place. First thing was the veterans came ahead of the money. Well, after you've been doing this for a while, the money's coming a little bit easier this year than what it did the previous years. Matter of fact, we probably could have done a May flight. How quick this money was coming in and people were donating, and it's all, you know, private citizens and businesses. It isn't any corporate money, anything like that. So, but what we're thinking as we go through this, number one, we're taking less wheelchairs because our veterans are getting a little bit younger, which means we can offload and unload a little bit quicker, which means we can stay longer, and this time we're hoping maybe we can add a few other memorials out there we could go to.
Good.
So, of course, last year we had our 102-year-old with us, and he was pretty much a celebrity.
Oh, yeah.
And so.
Well, it's a great thing you and Treasurer Tweet are doing, and we sure appreciate the time and effort you put in on it, and we appreciate everything you do for the veterans here in Story County.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you.
No other reports. Liaison assignments. Paul.
Pass.
Wayne.
Very quickly, I met with Deb yesterday, and primarily we just went over the agenda for the governance board. Nothing really new to report other than that from that meeting.
Outstanding. Thank you. Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address the board? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, announcements from supervisors. Paul?
Just as kind of a follow-up from Brett's report, I had the opportunity to sit down and chat with Harlan Borton last week. He just wasn't sure he was going to get to see us all before his tenure was done. I think Brett said he served 28 years on the commission. He just wanted to pass along his greetings to the three of us. He said it's been a pleasure to work with this board, as well as it has been with all the boards in his 28 years. And he was happy he had the opportunity to do it, and he's very grateful.
He's a good man.
Good man. Good man.
Good man. Wayne.
Announcements, basically.
Announcements.
Basically, I think most people are aware the mental health advocate bill was signed by the governor, which will be effective 7/1/15.
and the mental health advocate now will be considered a county employee, and current advocates are grandfathered in. Our own Deb Shulroth led the charge in getting this through the legislature, and I happened to sit in on a meeting that we had with the leadership before this came out of committee, and she was acknowledged at our governance board meeting yesterday for her role in bringing this about. I think we are aware that Carl Schout, who is the advocate for Story County and Boone, just recently passed away, and so we have an interim person that will be filling in from one of the other counties. And we met after the meeting, so Tom Foster and I from Boone, along with Deb and a couple others, met to talk about looking at this a little bit more. The AtNet team will be reviewing some guidance and things. We're going to review it, and then it will be brought back to each member board of supervisors for consideration so that we have a little bit of continuity of what the mental advocates will be doing, their expectations, looking at some of the active list to see if some of those clients are no longer needed to be served in that capacity and what have you. So anticipates that something will be coming to us reasonably soon that we'll be asked to approve by each of the member counties dealing with the mental health advocate.
Outstanding. Thank you. On Monday, May 4th, I'll represent Story County down at the state capitol as the governor recognizes Story County for our participation and inclusion in supporting home-based Iowa. Need to thank Drew and Dan Colhane of the AEDC for their efforts in spearheading, pulling Story County together. From our staff, Leanne Harder took the lead in making sure that Story County could be part of what is a very, very nice initiative and hopefully can be helpful to whatever level down the road. But there will be a group of us. Unfortunately, Leanne and Drew, I know, will both miss it. You guys are going to be at the Economic Development Institute at Oklahoma. Is that right?
Nashville, did you say? Oh.
Nashville's a good town.
I know. Oh.
Some of us were born in Nashville. But I wanted you guys to know that I'll be down there for the home-based Iowa recognition. If there's nothing further, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
I'm going to hit.